This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is Special Edition iFanboy Podcast, Suicide Squad, Hell to Pay. Special Edition iFanboy Podcast on Suicide Squad, Hell to Pay. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and the Animation Brain Trust has been reconvened. Paul Montgomery.
Yep.
And Ryan Haupt.
Assemble.
And we're talking about Suicide Squad, Hell to Pay. Paul, what are the stats on this one?
Okay, this is an American animated film produced by Warner Brothers Animation, distributed by Warner Brothers Home Entertainment. It's directed by Sam Liu, scripted by Alan Burnett, and this, I believe, is his last one.
This is his last film. He retired after this.
Talked about on the last podcast. It is the 31st film in the DC Universe animated original movie series, otherwise the 10th installment of the DC animated movie universe.
So does that mean it's the 10th one in the shared universe?
I guess. So this isn't in continuity with the previous Suicide Squad animated movie or the live action one for that matter.
No. It's clearly in the shared universe, as we'll get to. Spoiler warning. Especially having to deal with Reverse Flash, this is clearly set firmly in the stupid shared universe they've been doing for these movies.
Well, I mean,
post-Flashpoint, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's part of the metaverse, doesn't that mean they're all connected?
As Grant Morrison and Mark Waid taught
us. Or are there different metaverse, like
in
Hypertime, multiverse?
It's all...
I imagine the Arkham video game universe is one of the 52.
That's one of the, it's like,
God, I hope
Earth 31 or something.
Well, anyway, so this is not a sequel to the last one, which was Batman Assault on Arkham, which Paul and I hated and Ryan loved.
Yep, let's just go ahead and rewrite that history.
I just remember we did the whole podcast, and then we said, so, in conclusion, we hated it. And Ryan's like, no.
It's pretty good.
Like, what? Like, I didn't have that indication from the previous 30 minutes of conversation.
I think that just goes to show that we can share the same criticisms about a thing and still come away with different conclusions. Yeah.
Sure.
So this film is about Suicide Squad going off on a mission, as they do, sent by Amanda Waller to, as my favorite joke goes, retrieve the broadcast energy transmitter, basically a MacGuffin. They have to go get a card from Dr. Fate's Sanctum Sanctorum.
The Get Out of Hell free card.
The Get Out of Hell free card, which I loved.
It's a fun MacGuffin.
Why? Because Amanda Waller is terminal with some disease we aren't told, but we see her getting the scans. We see the giant folder saying diagnosis terminal on it.
That was funny. That was maybe the loudest I laughed.
Do you think that was also part of the weight loss thing?
Maybe.
Because they mentioned it at the beginning of the movie, how like she had just lost a bunch of weight. And so I thought, in hindsight, I thought maybe that was a hint that...
I wonder if that's Alan Burnett turning the knife one last time out the door at the current regime who's making everything look like the movies.
Right.
We open with a mission in action with a Suicide Squad that's comprised of Ocean Master, Deadshot, Count Vertigo, and Punch and Judy.
Julie.
I don't know anything about those characters.
They're from the Charlton comics.
I know, but the thing is, like, they started doing weird shit with energy beams, and I was like, I don't know anything about these characters. Wow.
It was pretty wild, their power set. It was kind of cool. It was a neat cold open to do this train robbery sequence.
Sure. And
even if you're a week-to-week DC Comics reader, you know, some deep cuts in here, and they make some very heavy cuts. as this turns out to be, this is an R-rated film. We should mention
it's R-rated for language, violence, and nudity.
Holy wow!
Holy violence!
So that, like, the first main thing that really shocked me was they're pulling off a lot of, like, headshots, and they're, you know, bloody headshots. But the thing that really, like, I gasped out loud, like, I just audibly gasped sitting alone watching this movie when Punch and Julie, I guess, used her splicing laser and, like, cut a big dude into, like, a T-bone steak, like, you know, like sliced him in different pieces. It was like the first Resident Evil movie where they do those, like, very surgical slices with the lasers, and then you see, like, you know, all the internals and stuff, and, like, the spinal column and everything. I was like, holy shit. Like, it was very graphic. Was not expecting that level of violence. But then that set the tone for the rest of it. Very violent film.
Yeah. Well, we should mention, in addition to R rating, its feature length, just by a smidge, is 86 minutes long.
Yeah.
Feature length tends to be starting around 90 minutes. Which was interesting, because I'll just high level view. I actually really enjoyed this.
Yeah,
I did too.
Converts,
against all odds, I was going into it not grumpy, but like, oh man, I don't really want to watch a Suicide Squad movie. But then I realized I like the concept of the Suicide Squad. It's the Dirty Dozen in the DC universe.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it was a terrible live action film, just because there was a terrible previous animated film, doesn't mean I couldn't enjoy this one. And I started about 20 minutes in, I was like, oh man, I'm really liking this. God damn it.
It was like, this isn't bad. Like, I wasn't looking forward to it at all. I was more looking forward to the next one we're going to talk about, which is Batman Ninja, which is just ridiculous. We haven't seen it yet, but looks interesting. So this one, I was just like, all right, I'll watch it. And, you know, more looking forward to talking to you guys about it. But then as I'm watching it, you know, like, it has some really interesting ideas.
Mm-hmm.
The plot is actually fairly complex, and if you are into the concept of the Suicide Squad, this is a really thoughtful take on that. And, you know, all the different themes that come up with a Wetworks team like this,
right,
with a lot of anti-heroes, not everything gets fully serviced.
And not everything worked, but a lot of it did.
It's able to chew most of what it bites off, I'll say, surprisingly.
I liked it too. I thought the high concept of this card that gets you out of hell was a lot of fun. When most of the characters on screen at any given moment have bombs in their skulls that could go off at any second.
Right.
So it made for a really interesting, like, kind of game of hot potato.
It was also a good way to sort of subvert that trope of the bombs, and that if it goes off and they're holding it, then big deal.
It's a one-time use thing, but, you know, Amanda Waller wants it for her, so she's the one who can press the button.
So we should mention, sorry, that in addition to the Suicide Squad being sent after it, there's another group of bad guys also going for it, being sent off by, as is revealed, Vandal Savage. And that includes Professor Zoom, Silver Banshee, and Blockbuster, and eventually also Scandal Savage, Vandal Savage's daughter.
Mm-hmm. I was like, whoa, X-23 is here. That's neat.
Yeah, I was like, what is... Oh, come on. The main team that we follow, the Suicide Squad team, is Deadshot, Harley Quinn, Captain Boomerang, Killer Frost, Copperhead, and Bronze Tiger. Loyalty switches that happen in the middle of it. Some people don't make it. I was surprised, since this is a shared universe film, how many people were killed off.
Yeah, they're real, like, I want to say they set that up in the beginning when they kill off Punch and Julie, but those are kind of, you know, not even like D-list characters, so you're like, of course they can go. But then some other bodies start piling up, and you're like, oh wow, they're really, you know, going all out with this.
I guess they're not making a Batman movie with Professor Pig in the future.
Professor Pig, voiced by James Urbaniak, who I'm a big fan of.
Good voice work in this one.
Yeah.
But also a lot of appearances, just sort of cameos. Two-Face makes a cameo, which was fun.
Right.
There's a Dr. Fate of a kind, which we'll talk to you about in a second. There might be some others, I don't remember. But I dug it. It worked better when it was silly.
Mm.
I thought most of the really serious stuff came off a little over the top serious. Usually when Bronze Tiger was having his speeches, like in the RV.
He has this really heavy speech. Yeah, the same moment I thought of as well, like when he has this whole moment about whether or not, you know, they're going to be justified in what they've done and could they be forgiven and stuff like that. And I was like, I don't buy Captain Boomerang getting anything out of that.
Yeah. He's not at the level of Pacifist Wonder Man, but he's approaching it. It's all on the spectrum.
I just got to say, Copperhead has never been more compelling. Like, this is the best. Like, they have used Copperhead in so many of these films, not just Suicide Squad stuff, but, you know, he was always around in the JLU and stuff like that. Just like a throwaway bad guy. And I thought he was really interesting.
Was it a new take on Copperhead?
Sort of. They usually don't make him that reptilian in his, like, emotive state.
Yeah.
The contortionist part, was that new?
I don't think that's new, but okay. I could be wrong.
Like, I feel like usually he's more like Scorpio from Spider-Man.
Uh-huh.
Or Scorpion, where it's like it's a dude in a costume.
Right, yeah, for sure.
With maybe, like, a forked tongue or something.
And, like, a mechanical tail, yeah.
Yeah, and here it's more like he's filling the role of a killer croc.
Yeah.
Where he's a strange mutant. So the other moment where I laughed really hard was when they were getting on the RV and they turn and look at him and he audibly says hiss instead of hissing. Like, sometimes he hisses and then sometimes he just says hiss. And he's just this weird, kinky, strange, like, morally ambiguous. He reminded me of, I thought about Con Air a lot while I was watching this movie.
Hmm.
And he reminded me of, which character was it? The Buscemi?
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah. Like, he's just this guy off to the side and you're not quite sure what his deal is. So it was a really interesting cast of characters. The character designs were great.
Yeah, unusually. Only because we've been focused so much. We're going to talk about the hero designs at the end. We talk about the film after Batman Ninja. Yeah, I mean, it looked good. I wasn't annoyed by Harley Quinn.
She was more subdued for this.
She wasn't full-on movie version.
Well, one of my quibbles was that she was a little dumb. I like when we occasionally get glimpses that Harley is actually a trained, you know, psychiatrist or has a doctorate or whatever. I like when
there's a little glimmer of that.
But
yeah.
This was just full-on dumb Harley all the time. You know, bull in a china shop, running around causing chaos, which is fine. It's just not my favorite interpretation of the character.
Yeah, it was not a terribly, I mean, nuanced one. Like, she's sort of down in the second tier in terms of level of characterization. Bronze Tiger has more of a, you know, a character arc and
she's not a main character really.
Right. Yeah.
Which is unusual, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, they're really pushing Harley Quinn these days, so somebody might expect that going into this. But it's really Deadshot, and I thought Christian Slater was great.
Yeah.
He was. I just, you know, one of my quibbles is I get why in the live action films they never have the characters wear the masks. I totally understand that. I don't have a problem with it. But in the animated film, it's not like we're not seeing Will Smith's face here.
Right.
It's just some random animated face. So wear the mask. He's got a fucking cool mask. He wore it sometimes, but most of the times he didn't wear it. He doesn't emote. He's just, you know, these aren't like super expressive animations.
Which, I mean, I said I really like the character designs, but, you know, not wild about his, like, you know, overly sculpted goatee.
Yeah.
Like, sort of, it's like a Robert Downey Jr. kind of thing. And it's that was a little distracting.
But he was good. Christian Slater was good as Deadshot. Tara Strong, who's played partly a bunch of times with Harley Quinn. This was actually a cast that was more about, I think, strength of voice acting than it was about big names, because there wasn't a lot of big names in this one.
Yeah, it's like Slater is like the marquee one, and then it's a lot of,
it's like veterans,
journeyman, like, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, voiceover.
I would like to give a special shout out to Sissy Jones, who is primarily a video game voice actress who did Knockout, the woman from Apocalypse. She was in one of my favorite video games from a couple of years ago, Firewatch, which is a game that relies heavily on the
quality of its
voice
acting.
Oh,
that's right. She was in Firewatch, yeah.
It's so good. So, special shout out for her, because I enjoyed hearing her and being reminded of how great that game was.
Mm-hmm.
What do we think of the dumb jock, Dr. Fate, Steel Maxim?
Greg Brunberg, by the way.
I hated it at first, and then it really grew on me.
I think it was like a really interesting idea, and it just shows how kind of lived in this DC universe is, because, like, a lot of times we see some of these movies and they're just one-offs and it's just the most iconic take on every character.
Right.
And here, Nabu is in place, but he found this endurance runner, you know, meathead character who ends up being a male stripper hiding in plain sight, as he says. And it's just like, that's a funny idea. You're not going to see a whole run of that character in the comics or, you know, a TV series or anything. But as like, you know, for a Suicide Squad movie, that's kind of interesting.
As a one-off, the idea that maybe not every hero is the most noble and he wasn't not noble, but he was, you know, kind of a dumb dude who ended up with the helmet.
When he gets the helmet, he's not bad. He's not that bad at it. Like, he actually has some competence once he, you know, Naboo clearly is handling a lot of the heavy lifting of the spell work, but in terms of being able to hold his own in a fight and wave his hands in the right way as needed, like, he does okay.
Who amongst us doesn't have an ankh tattoo in their lower back? I mean,
can't see me, but I'm raising my hand.
Just me?
I guess so.
I thought that was a fun twist. So then they're being pursued by, as we said, Professor Zoom, Silver Banshee, Blockbuster, Reverse Flash, Professor Zoom. He can't run quite as fast and doesn't have quite all of his powers, which I thought was interesting. Mm-hmm. And then it was revealed, and I felt a little dumb because I think the costume design was different. I might be wrong about that. That this is the Zoom from Flashpoint.
I think he looks like the one from Flashpoint. There are certain...
That's what I mean. I didn't realize it wasn't like regular Zoom. It was Flashpoint Zoom.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought that reveal was really cool. I was like, oh, damn. Yeah. Like when he takes his mask off, it's a really interesting tease. Like, you see, like, oh, why can't he run so fast? And Deadshot points that out. He's like, he should be in here and like snapping all of our necks. Like, why is he running behind the RV? What's going on? And then later you see like he's got some blood trickling down from his mask.
Yep.
And you're like, what's going on there? And then later he pulls the mask off and he's got a hole straight through his forehead out the back. And you're like, what's going on? And I think it's a really interesting mystery and it's a cool reveal, especially, you know, if you've been watching these over the years as we have, and you're like, oh, that's the Flashpoint one. And it's harkening back to this moment.
So first of all, when he pulled the mask off, I went, what? Because it was an awesome reveal. But second of all, I thought it was really cool too. And I thought this was the work in Alan Burnett of an old master, right? I mean, this is his culmination. This is his last one out. And he, as you said earlier, he did a really interesting layered story with a good mystery in it. And I thought, you're right, he laid these foundational points. Looking back, they seem so obvious. But, you know, I didn't realize it. And then when he revealed, I'm from a different timeline, and Batman shot me in the head. And I was just like, I think I had my mouth open while that explanation was happening. It was a nice, nice reveal. And also explaining how he was still alive was interesting.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting use of the Speed Force powers. Like, that's potentially a plot you can use. Like, oh, he's like, he's slowing everything down and he's living his final seconds. But he's just stretching it out over time and going into this other timeline. That's some of the fun stuff that you get with CW Flash series.
Yep.
I really liked what they did with Zoom there. In season two, there was a lot of criticism in the beginning because I don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen Flash season two, but even though it's been out forever, but there was a lot of criticism in the beginning, and then they sort of pulled a fast one on us.
Yep.
And by the end, you're like, oh, that's a really interesting long game that they played there. And, you know, it there's some plot holes in it, but this isn't the same thing, but it's a tight little Flash mystery using those powers, that power set. And that's one of the things that I found really impressive about this, and this is a weird thing, but I wrote down in my notes, imaginative deaths. Like, we said the deaths feel meaningful because you weren't expecting characters to get killed off, as usually they like to leave everything on the table by the end. But here they used the explosives in the head in interesting ways. Oh, if you're in the proximity of that, that's going to kill the person, you know, whose head explodes, but then also whoever's near it, because that's the scale of the explosion. And then you have the stuff with the get out of hell free card. And even if it's goofy stuff like Vandal Savage, you know, surgically implanting it in himself and, you know, everything that means, it just like there are some just really smart choices and uses of powers and combinations with all of the characters. So I thought it was neat and surprising. Like, how often do these features genuinely surprise us?
Really?
I mean, a lot of the time they're an adaptation, so we know all the beats. But even when they're like original things or like they're mashups of like a couple different stories, we know how these superhero stories go. So it's kind of rare for there to be an actual surprise. And this one I thought had a couple of them. So I was very impressed.
Well, one of the things I thought was interesting is with the reveal of Dr. Zoom's head wound, that actually justifies the R rating as a plot point in a way they haven't bothered. The previous films, it feels like the PG-13 or R rating is just so they can swear and just so they can be a little bit more violent. But here, you actually wouldn't have been able to do that reveal as effectively
unless
you see a hole through a guy's head.
And you see Batman through that hole.
Right. Yeah. It's really grotesque. It is upsetting to see, but that's also the point of it.
Good observation. I didn't even think of that, but that's absolutely right. It wouldn't have been as impactful if it had just been like a little bullet hole instead of what looked like you could drive a train through it.
Yeah, on the R rating thing, that's funny because there's an F-bomb in here.
There's a nipple of a lady.
It's super fleeting. It's loud. It's on there for like a frame.
Because I had to think about it. I was like, oh, right, okay. So there's the F-bomb, and then like a couple minutes later, another character enters, and we get a freaking, and I thought that was kind of funny.
Well, they're only allowed so many.
Because they're only allowed, yeah, it's like it's, I know on Breaking Bad, they were allowed like one per season.
Yeah, it's a weird standards formula.
But it makes it kind of powerful.
Yeah, when it does happen. When you're not overusing it. And I think when the violence worked, it worked for those moments that Ryan just mentioned, and less so were the massacring of the thugs that happened in the first half, I'd say.
I was worried that it was a little like kind of try hard, like, oh, we can do blood, you know, blood and, you know, and all this stuff. But like later on, as you got more invested in the characters, each subsequent, you know, act of violence became more, I don't want to say special, but like, you know what I mean? Like it became more pivotal and impactful, and it was part of the plot and less part of the spectacle. Speaking of spectacles, if I could say one thing that didn't work for me was there's a presentational thing where they do a bit of like Grindhouse in the beginning, mm-hmm. and it kind of goes away after a while. They do like some like film grain, some like lines going through the screen, and like when they do the title logo for Suicide Squad, Hell to Pay, it's like it felt very mid-aughts kind of. I thought of that movie Domino with Keira Knightley.
Yes.
Throw in effects at the screen. It's like, you know, somebody doing their first, you know, film project when they get Final Cut Pro and like they've got access to all these.
Here's
weird,
all
the wipes you can do. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's fleeting. It's very minor stuff. Like it feels like it's at a disconnect with the actual feature.
I didn't love the guitar score, you know, the sort of metal. It was more prominent in the beginning.
Mm hmm.
But that's just my own personal taste. I think the movie stabilized after a certain point. Wasn't there one point late where they used that kind of effect, Paul, where they had everybody's heads in the screen?
Yes.
Yes, there was, yeah.
Yeah.
But overall, I think the sort of trickiness went away.
There were some cool directing choices, like compositional things. I think of the bit where Deadshot is waiting for everybody in the parking lot, and he's still in the RV, and Killer Frost is being abducted by the other group. And like she's in the background. So like using, you know, foreground and background stuff and not just fast cuts between everything, like actually leaving a take. And there's some just neat sight gags with Copperhead,
mm-hmm.
stuff like that. And so, you know, it's I would say this is definitely above average on the list of just production quality.
For sure.
And just overall storytelling stuff that, you know, the action sequences look really nice. I don't know if it's the best animation they've ever had, but it's a combination of really good character designs and direction choices.
I just keep going back to the MacGuffin. I just love the idea of this get out of hell free card. What other object would really have all the villains crawling all over each other to get? You know, money is money, jewels are jewels, whatever. But saving your eternal soul after all the horrible things you've done is something that would release the inner demons of everyone. You know, one of the villains in the Suicide Squad turns bad, but they're all bad, turns against the team. You know, there's a lot of fighting over the card because they're all scared about the things they've done. And I love that.
They each have a different philosophy vis-a-vis this card and like the afterlife. Some of them, like, they don't buy into it, but they're like, I'll just auction it off, like, because evidently a lot of you guys believe it, so I'm gonna, you know, auction it off to the highest bidder. Some people are like, I'm just going to use this to get out of here, because it's basically like a, you know, like having a shield. No one's going to shoot me if I have this in my hand.
Right.
The ultimate hostage.
Then it doesn't work. Yeah, it's the ultimate hostage thing. So that's interesting when you play on the idea that, as Batman says, criminals are a superstitious and cowardly lot. At first, I was like, are they really going to buy into this card that just says, you know, because like you have to take them on their word. But a lot of villains are very superstitious and might totally buy into that.
It came from Dr. Fate's house.
It came from Dr. Fate's house, too. And they've seen some magic and everything. So that, you know, they've lived through some stuff. So there's a potentially easier, you know, buy in. There's less of a, you know, but I do like that it's different from person to person on the team.
Yeah. I was surprised. I was not expecting this to go the way it did, and it's a bummer that Burnett's leaving, although it felt like he was putting it all on the table, you know?
Yeah.
Although was the last one he wrote, was that Gods and Monsters?
They all blend together at this point. I don't know.
It was eight movies ago, but he did that one with Tim, and that was a really terrific one. It just shows, you know, these veterans, they're still real good at this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I was happy I enjoyed it, because when I saw it was his last one, I was like, oh no, what if I hate it? But I didn't. It was terrific.
I also just silly stuff. I actually like the CGRV.
Yeah.
I thought they put
was the best,
like, some
integration,
loving detail into it.
Yeah,
like,
it was
it's
the
very
best
foxy
integration of one of those CGI vehicles into one of these films. It's finally getting to the point where it doesn't completely stand out, yeah, as not a part of the animated set. Solid work.
Alan Burnett is listed as writer on... So we did some TV stuff, and then also Justice League versus Teen Titans, Batman, Bad Blood,
yeah,
and then Gods and Monsters, going backwards.
Right. Interesting. Okay. You did three in a row then, because it was Gods and Monsters, Bad Blood, and Justice League versus Teen Titans. Those were all three in a row.
What the hell was Bad Blood? I don't even remember.
I think that was the Batman family one. That was the one where I lost my shit on Damian on the show.
Oh, God. Okay.
Was anyone else a little surprised that Batman didn't make a cameo?
Yes.
No, not really.
Interesting.
He wasn't in the last one, was he? The last,
yes,
Suicide one?
It was called Batman Assault on Arkham.
Right. Yeah, I do remember he turned up there.
We saw Thomas Wayne Batman briefly.
That's true.
It's sort of like a blink and you'll miss it kind of thing. Like, wait a second, what did I just see? And it's cool,
actually pleasantly surprised, because
yeah,
I think other than Dr. Fate, there were no heroes in the movie other than Thomas Wayne Batman briefly. Interesting. Well... this was super solid. I was happy to have watched it. I was going to say Batman, Suicide Squad, Hell to Pay, but that's too many subsets. Suicide Squad, Hell to Pay. Are we going to rate it? I don't remember.
Oh.
Ratings?
Ratings.
Ryan, you start.
What's our scale? Remind me.
Out of five.
Okay, I always want to give them letter grades, and I know that's wrong. I will go 4.25.
I will go... yeah, 4.25 sounds good.
I'll go 4.35.
Ooh.
Dick.
So there's...
this is Price is Right rules.
There's two more happening. Yes, I'm going to go $1. There's two more coming out. Let's talk about Batman Ninja in a second, because that's okay. Literally the next one comes out. But this film obviously had the featurette on the next official animated original film, which is Death of Superman.
Wait, I have to interject. Paul, you and I both gave it almost exactly what its Rotten Tomatoes score is right now.
It's like 83%, isn't it?
Yep. We are, yeah. And 4.25 out of 5 is 85%. Oh, okay. So you and I are essentially, the two of us by ourselves, are the perfect aggregator, and Rotten Tomatoes can go ahead and shut down. Okay. And you and I will just review all the movies.
Sounds good. Sounds fair.
All right.
Death of Superman is the next film. They had a featurette on it. They didn't call it part one. They just said Death of Superman. I think the next one is called Reign of Superman after that.
Oh, I didn't know if they did like an Infinity War thing where they collapsed it into one. I somehow never saw that up until like a month
ago. No. They talk about how it's the first part. So the first thing to know is it basically looks like Doomsday versus the Justice League, and it's all of their in canon for these films costumes, which haven't changed since the first one. So
okay,
there's a lot of Superman with his turtleneck running around, and his sleeves that go over his hands, and
well, I mean, maybe
who's playing Superman this time? Because it's always a different Superman, so like it's the same look, but it's a different actor.
Jerry O'Connell.
Jerry O'Connell.
Otherwise, it's the same cast. Rosario Dawson, Nathan Fillion, Christopher Gorham, Shamar Moore. It's the same Justice League cast.
Okay. Wasn't Alan Tudyk Superman in one of them?
He was Superman in one
like
of them.
Like the first one?
Maybe, okay. Yeah. But...
And Sam Daly, Tim Daly's son, was Superman in one of the other ones.
Oh, that's right.
I saw it. I was like, oh, I mean, Superman's had four costumes in the comics since they've done these movies, and they're still sticking with that first one, which is the worst.
So,
one.
I mean, what would you want? Would you want,
this is,
like,
well, this is also the one they're gonna kill him in.
And they should kill that suit, too.
Yeah, maybe he'll come back in the black suit, which was a real missed opportunity for that film.
Want the hair. That's what I want. Really, it's about, like, this is...
Guys.
This is a formality before we get to Reign of the Superman, and that's when you get the hair and the... The questions I want answered are they doing Superboy with the full-out, you know, buckles on the leather jacket?
Leather jacket, round sunglasses, floppy hair, earring.
That's what I want.
Full-on early 90s. He better look like that.
Yes, that's what I'm looking for.
I mean, it looked really good. It was nice to see Doomsday fighting other characters, because that was always one of the big deals with the comics, was that he beat all these other characters to get to Superman, like a video game boss. But
right, yeah.
I just, Superman standing in very dramatic poses with that stupid costume really undercut the scenes for me. But that'll be my own cross to bear when I get to it. It looks high quality. It looks good. I'm going to watch the original one before that one. So I have it fresh in my mind.
Which is where this all started.
Right, the original one from 2000 and...
Was it just called Superman Doomsday?
Yes, Superman Doomsday, which was from 2007. So,
yep.
11 years, guys.
Mm.
That was Adam Baldwin as Superman.
That's right.
So that one comes out in spring.
That's what I was going to ask. What is that? What is spring anymore?
What is spring anymore? Do I have it written down? I don't think it's got an official release date yet.
At some point, spring is only, and like fall are only going to be known as just, it's just like marking time for when movies and video games come out.
Or each day will have its own season. What's today? Today's the spring. Tomorrow's a winter. That's the way it's been going lately. So that comes out spring. That we talked about that one. But in the meantime, let's talk about the next film. Paul, you're really excited about it.
Oh my God, it looks so dumb. I'm so excited. Batman Ninja. I saw it first as like a, I think I saw it online. Like I was scrolling through my Twitter feed like a year ago or something. And they were talking about, oh, we're going to do another one of those things with, you know, anime directors and stuff. And I thought it was going to be a tie-in with like those action figures that they do, like the Tamashii Nations or whatever they're called, like the high-end, like $80. Like, here's what the Joker would look like if he were scissors, like just strange, super animated out designs. And I think those things are cool.
Right.
But I thought it was like a tie-in, but apparently this is just some weird original project with a very cool visual style. And my first instinct was, oh, they're doing as if Batman lived in, you know, feudal Japan and was a Ronin or whatever. No, nope. It's got to be more convoluted than that. It's Batman from now and he goes back in time.
Sweet.
And becomes a samurai. And I think...
This is Ito by Gaslight?
This is Ito by...
Well, that was a joke about Gotham by Gaslight.
I know it was. I'm just thinking kind of lights it. I don't know.
Ito by Paper Lantern, Paul.
This comes out in the Paper U.S. Lantern. Physically May 8th. So we have a couple of weeks for that one. It comes out theatrically in Japan in June.
Oh, does it really?
Yeah.
Interesting. And, okay.
And thanks to Patreon, we'll be at the premiere.
Yeah, digital release April 24th, physical release May 8th. So you can look for the show the week of the May 8th. I'm excited. There was a trailer for it before this one, Suicide Squad, but I didn't watch it. I just saw the very first second of it, which was Tony Hale's Joker. And I was intrigued.
At some point on Twitter, when I found out that Tony Hale was going to be playing the Joker, I went through and figured out that like most people from Arrested Development, most of them have played or have provided voices for DC animated characters. And some of it stretches back to like the 70s, but
interesting,
like older stuff, like pre-Bruce Timm stuff. A lot of maybe they played a Greek god at some point in the Pantheon, but like some of them, we've had a couple Batman in there. You know, Job has been Batman.
That's right. Lego Batman. Batman. You can look forward to an animated brain trust discussion on Batman Ninja happening somewhere around the first week of May. And then we'll be coming back to discuss Death of Superman whenever that comes out in quote-unquote spring. In the meantime, you can check the show out at ifanboy.com. There'll be a discussion post there. You can talk about your thoughts and feelings on Suicide Squad, Hell to Pay, as well as our weekly podcasts are found there. The Pick of the Week show, we talk about the week's comics. Occasionally, Paul and Ryan appear on those shows, and we have our special edition shows. We talk about the films. The next one coming up will be Avengers. It'll be Avengers Infinity War in a week, 2 weeks, 1 week.
You guys nervous? You guys?
I got my ticket.
I have my ticket for Thursday.
Yep, Thursday night. I'm excited.
I would tell everyone to go as early as possible. I think people are going to get spoiled.
Yeah, that's the big thing. I was like, I was like, should I go Friday or no? I got to do Thursday night because
I have a feeling spoilers are going to be big for this one.
Yeah,
I have no inside information. I just know I have a feeling. But I'm excited. I'm excited. I have a feeling.
I'm surprised they haven't done like posters like one of these Avengers will die, you know, like that kind of thing.
All of these original Avengers will die. I'm excited. So that check those shows out at ifanboy.com. In the meantime, we're going to go watch more cartoons, I guess. Until then, I'm Connor.
Yeah. I'm Paul.
Ryan. Like a shadow on a girl, this is what a bitch is.